The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have. Told you turn the other cheek, and they met it with a bat. Fucking protesting them citizens. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, you died, good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around and pump crack right up when you did it. And they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called a national guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. The one that you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
For those of you who don't know, good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today's date is February 26, 2016. Today is my mom's birthday, so happy birthday to my moms. So glad that you were born, because without you, I would not be here. So just want to give a birthday shout out to my mom's Linda Reed. Today, I have some news and information I would like to share with you during the next hour. I do want to talk about Hillary Clinton, but first, let me just say for those that noticed that we did not have any live programming on the station over the past couple of days, that was due to widespread power outages in the area that I live in Western North Carolina. You may have heard the news about this storm that moved up from the Gulf of Mexico and moved up northeast. Fortunately, we did not get a lot of destruction or hurricanes or tornadoes or anything of that sort in the area that I live in. It was kind of weird because right above our house, you could look up in the sky and see clear skies, but then if you look towards the north, just a few miles away, I estimated, you see these big dark clouds and stuff, and you could just hear the wind whipping the trees around up the street from us, or up the road, I should say. And so we were fortunate, but a lot of people suffered. I think there's even been some people that were killed during this tornadoes and whatnot in some of the other states. And so, you know, we just happened to be fortunate, but we did lose power for about 2 days. Now, I could have pulled out the generator, but I tell you, I did not want to go into our storage trailer and search for that generator and then try to hook it up and whatnot. So I just simply went to a relative's house and who had power just down the street, actually, and stayed there until our power was restored. So that's what happened. And so I wasn't here to engineer most of the programs that you hear on this station, so, you know, don't have any other engineers. I certainly would like to have some more engineers. Certainly have put out the call for the other engineers, but, you know, as it is, I'm the only engineer, so that's why you didn't hear any live programming over the past couple of days. But I'm back on air now, and the rest of the live programming will be going on as scheduled. Now, before I talk about Hillary Clinton, there's a couple of stories related to her that I want to talk about. You had a black woman from Charlotte, North Carolina, who went to a fundraiser down in South Carolina, and she confronted Clinton with a sign that said, you know, was quoting Hillary Clinton about bringing children to heal. Also, you know, talked and she told Hillary Clinton that I'm not a super predator. You know, this is the racist rhetoric of the 90s that Hillary Clinton was out there pushing, as she pushed for the devastating Clinton crime bill that was passed in the 90s that led to unprecedented mass incarceration, aka modern slavery of black and poor people. And when I say unprecedented, I mean unprecedented. You know, I view prison slavery the same as I view plantation slavery prior to 1865. And even if we factor in plantation slavery, at no time during that period of slavery here in the United States did the population of enslaved Africans ever approach the population of enslaved Africans we have in the United States today through the prison. So, you know, that's a very important issue. Of course, slavery is an important issue, but it's very important to point out the connections between politicians and the policy that you know, has these outcomes that are disproportionately negatively impacting black and poor communities. While I was searching for the video of the young woman speaking at that $500 a plate fundraiser Hillary Clinton was having, I believe it was in Rock Hill, South Carolina, which is just across the border from Charlotte, North Carolina. But while I was searching for that video, I came across a town hall meeting that was hosted by News One towards the end. I want to say it was December, but it might have been in November. That was hosted by Roland Martin of News One. It was posted to YouTube. And so I was watching some of it. Even though I don't care about Hillary Clinton or anything she has to say, because I know she's a liar and whatnot, but I do have to listen sometimes, you know, in order for me to engage in my political commentary and analysis. But she was asked a question by a student, a black student, at this town hall meeting in South Carolina. Again, this was a few months ago, about her, what would she do as president to tackle federal cannabis prohibition, you know. And so she gave the standard answer that she always has given. I've even heard her, you know, repeat this recently. And it's just a bunch of lies. It's a bunch of garbage. But a bunch of people don't know that she's lying because, you know, they don't really study these sort of issues in depth and whatnot. And the way that town hall meeting was conducted, Roland Martin really did not, I felt, in my opinion, really did not ask her any good follow-up questions. In fact, he changed the subject from federal cannabis prohibition, that's pot or weed for those that don't know what cannabis is, and asked her about sickle cell anemia. And I'm like, you know, why did he want to hurry up and change the subject? I don't know what's going on, Mr. Martin. But anyway, I got some information, because in that clip, and I'll share that clip, she talks about the science, and we need to do research and you know, give this experiment time before we do anything. I mean, it's just a bunch of BS, man. You know, cannabis has been legalized in a number of states, whether it's medicinally or whether it is just outright legalizing it for recreational use, sort of like, you know, well, not sort of like, but exactly like how you regulate alcohol in its various forms. But you know, for this woman to keep repeating these lies and never being called out on it, just goes to show you, man, like Michelle Alexander said, you know, the public, the voting public, is not really being educated on these politicians and their talking points and the policies that they promote and whatnot. So I do have some information that directly contradicts the false information Hillary Clinton is putting out there about or in relation to cannabis legalization, you know, acting like the research hasn't been done when the research has been done and is still being done, you know, at the university level. But before I get to that, again, we'll be on air for about an hour today. Let me go ahead and give out the telephone numbers. The conference line number is 641-715-3660. That is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-pound, and you just hit star 6 and 1 to comment. If you would like to make a comment to signal me, you can also give us a call using that web-based flash phone. Just click the icon, the little button that says call the show, and just enter those same numbers and you'll be able to connect. And you can also call us via the studio line, which is 704-951-5030. All right, so before I get into those clips, let me just go over share some news stories with you as we've been sharing through our various social media platforms. South Africa has a situation that is going on right now. There's a story being reported from news24.com, and it's talking about apparently you had some protests going on at a university in South Africa. And, you know, you had private security, from what I've been reading, private security firms or officers came in, as well as local police, and targeted all the black students and arrested quite a few of them, whether they were engaging in protesting or not. They just ran up in the dorms and whatnot and just arresting people. And they were ignoring the white students, whether or not they were participating in the protests or not. They didn't seem to care. They just apparently just went out there to target black people. So that's an interesting story for you. Let me see. We got a telephone call, area code 803. You're on Black Talk Radio News. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Peace, Brother Scotty Reed. This is Max Parkus tuning in to the program and listen to what you got to say.
Okay, all right. Well, certainly, Max, you can hang out on this particular line, but we try to reserve this line for callers. But you're the only one on there, so you know that's cool.
I can switch over if you prefer.
It would be better for me that way. If you want to chime in, right. I mean, listen.
I'll be right
the
there
comments.
In a second.
All right, thanks, Max. Okay, so that's a story that's coming out of News24 for whatever reason. I'm unable to pull up the website. It was saying, well, maybe they might be getting a whole lot of traffic. All right, it just came up. All right, this was published today. It says Free State Police and University of the Free State Management are facing allegations from students who say that residents were raided and police arrested people without provocation on Thursday night. So this went down last night. Apparently, police and private security guards from Fidelity were involved in the raid. According to the students on campus, between 9 and 21 black students were arrested while white ones were ignored. The arrests come after a demand by students that Vice Chancellor Jonathan Jansen resign was rejected. A woman told the Daily Vox website that one officer threatened to beat students if they didn't let him into their women-only residence. A screen grab of a conversation with an apparent first-year student shows him saying that police busted through his room and took me out. The student says he didn't take part in the protests. I am not really clear, and these articles are not making clear why these students are calling for the resignation of Vice Chancellor Jonathan Jansen. Now, what I'm not seeing is any kind of reports of vandalism or property being destroyed. I'm not seeing any of those reports, and so what we see here is a attack on free speech. Now, I know, you know, this isn't the United States of America. This is occurring in South Africa. But, you know, I don't view rights that our rights are limited through whatever government we are subjected to or under and what rights they say we have. I mean, freedom of speech is a human right. You know, people should have the right to come together and to protest without being targeted, without being arrested. Now, you know, another troubling thing that I'm seeing from this story is I'm seeing a whole lot of black cops participating or security officials participating in the obstruction of these students' human rights to protest and whatnot. And, you know, South Africa in general, they went through, you know, a long protracted struggle in order to get equal rights in this African country for Africans, you know, black people and whatnot. But if you think that racism and white supremacy as a system has been eliminated in South Africa, then you really haven't been paying attention to what has happened to South Africa since, you know, we could say the election of Nelson Mandela. We could rightly say, even though you got black politicians and a black president and all that kind of stuff, that racism and white supremacy is still institutionalized and being practiced. Now, what is really, really sad to me is that once again, we see where proxy racism, and for those that are unfamiliar with the term proxy racism, that is where non-white people, black people, whatever, however people classify themselves as not being in the politically dominant population where they have power, which is primarily mostly white people, so white power, you know, that this persists, in my opinion, because of proxies of the races, of the white races, of the system of racism and white supremacy. You know, people are willing to take a paycheck in order to uphold racism and white supremacy and whatnot. And it's just truly sad. And it is not a new phenomenon. It is something that has gone on, I suspect, since Europeans first stepped foot on the continent of Africa, and people traded with them, including in human beings, human trafficking and whatnot, and also being their guides into the interior of Africa. Same thing happened here in America on this continent with you have Indians who are assisting these racists on spying on and showing them how to get to other tribes to attack those tribes, and so that they could benefit whatever the tribe the traitor belonged to or who was assisting the white supremacists. So this is not a new phenomenon. And most of the counter-racism talk that I hear just simply fails to address this issue of proxy racism. I do not think it is logical to believe that racism and white supremacy could persist as a system without the help of non-white people. Now, you know, when you're talking about countries where there's predominant population of white people and races are in power, then, yeah, they still use us. They still use non-white people to secure their positions of power or to carry out their policies. But when I look at predominantly non-white nations like South Africa, and they're still dealing with racism, and even though they have all these black people in so-called positions of power, that's a huge problem that we're going to have to deal with. You know, and it's not something that people haven't tried to address in the past. It's just, you know, we haven't come up, I guess, with a constructive solution that is addressing that issue and minimizing the impact of non-white people on other non-white people, you know, in the context of racism and white supremacy. So that's one of the stories that I wanted to take note of. Here's another story. This is kind of related to what I'm going to talk about here in just a bit pertaining to Hillary Clinton. But y'all may have heard of it. Well, it depends on how old you are. But you may have heard of the DARE program, which is a program that came into existence as an organization as well as a school program to, quote unquote, educate students about the dangers of drugs. The name of it is the Drug Abuse Resistance Education Program. And it's not so much that I'm against educating people on drugs and whatnot, but there has been engaged for many decades. And again, I don't know if I mentioned this. This came out during the Reagan administration and whatnot. You had Nancy Reagan being a champion of DARE and whatnot. But they have used false information about drug use, about the impact of drugs, about so-called gateway drugs and whatnot. They have long been putting out propaganda to prevent any kind of reform or, you know, the legalization of certain drugs. They have been at the forefront of that. And so it was published on the Sun-Times recently that DARE quietly removed cannabis from its list of gateway drugs, because the science has disproven that theory and whatnot. And so, you know, without much fanfare, DARE has removed cannabis from their list on their website of gateway drugs. Now, if you read the article that's posted about this on Black Talk Radio Network's Facebook page, you will see that it's just now being noticed that they removed cannabis from the list of gateway drugs, and that when they did research to look at some of the previous versions of the website, they're saying that it appears they removed cannabis from their list of gateway drugs going back to 2013. So that was like 3 years ago. But again, this hasn't gotten much attention. You know, people that still want to keep prohibition in place, like a Hillary Clinton, want to act like the science doesn't show these things and the research hasn't been done, when in fact it has been done. Now, here is another story that I came across that, again, is related, and it's from the same website, suntimes.com. Do y'all remember Jocelyn Elders? She was the first black surgeon general, and she was appointed by Bill Clinton. Now, she only served in that position for a few months before conservatives and whatnot started targeting her for some of the things that she stated that was considered controversial, or they were against it and whatnot. But she, I did not notice, but she was one of the first people out there to call for the legalization of drugs. And this is a direct quote from her. She said, "With legalization, we would stop using our poor to subsidize private prison industries." Let me read a little bit from this SunTimes.com article. It says, "Jocelyn Elders stands out for not simply being the first black U.S. Surgeon General, which she was. She also stands out for being way ahead of the times on controversial issues such as drug policy, criminal justice, and sexual education. Although she was forced to resign after just 15 months, so that was a little over a year and 3 months, as Surgeon General under the Bill Clinton administration due to her outspoken opinions, Elders remains an important figure in the marijuana reform landscape. She was among very few prominent voices calling for marijuana reform as early as 1993. When she said legalizing drugs would markedly reduce our crime rate, as reported by the San Francisco Chronicle. Elders is set to keynote the International Cannabis Business Conference in San Francisco on February. That's already occurred. It happened a couple of weeks ago. Let me see. Here is a couple of highlights that she said about cannabis prohibition. She said, "With legalization, we would stop using our poor to subsidize private prison industries. We should spend more money on drug treatment rather than incarceration. Also, states and federal government would not spend so much on keeping people warehoused in prisons and could spend that money on education and community development. People's lives could improve by not having the specter of a criminal conviction hovering over them forever, affecting child custody, voting rights, employment, business loans, trade licensing, student aid, public housing, and other public assistance. The consequences of any drug conviction are lifelong and severe and are not experienced equally throughout the population despite comparable drug use and selling rates. African Americans and Hispanics are disproportionately punished for drug law violations, whether they are for drug using or for drug selling. So there is a surgeon, former Surgeon General, appointed by the Clinton administration that has a view that is in direct contrast to that of the Clinton administration in the 1990s and even what they're pushing today. And Hillary Clinton, make no mistake, we have reported on this station her long ties to the private prison industry. Check out the radio program, New Abolitionist Radio. In our archives, we have discussed this and shared this information in the past, how, you know, they gave Wackenhut their start, you know, as a primary, as a very prominent supporter of private prisons. And Wackenhut later became the Correction Corporation of America, the world's largest private prison enslaver. And, you know, it was only recently that Hillary Clinton stopped taking money from private prison lobbyists. And she only stopped taking that money when she was called out by Black Lives Matter activists at a closed door meeting that they had. And you know, I can't say, but I suspect it was only because I targeted one of those people in that meeting to ask her about her connections to private prisons that the question was even asked. And so she hasn't come up with a plan. She simply said, if elected, I will end private prisons. She's telling the damn lie. Don't believe her. This woman is trying to minimize. She's trying to minimize a decrease in the number of people who are going to be find themselves in legalized slavery and human trafficking. And her response to this brother's question, which I'm gonna play in a bit, about where she stands on federal prohibition, it's just more evidence that this woman has not changed. It's just more of the same. And people need to pay attention, and they need to do research on these things. And she's just a damn liar. I can't say it stated any plainer than that. All right, so I'm going to jump in and play those clips. First of the woman from Charlotte, North Carolina, who confronted Hillary Clinton over her racist rhetoric of the 90s to help the Republicans and Bill Clinton target black and poor and non-black, I should say, poor communities with their mass incarceration legislation to continue slavery as a cornerstone of capitalism here in this country. But first, we're going to take a station identification break, kick some message music, and then we'll come back and we'll get into those two stories. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, and indeed, I'm broadcasting from behind these enemy lines. Stay tuned.
This is Ron Hayes with Hood News, and you're listening to the Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned.
When we see our people being brutalized by white bigots, white racists, we think that they are foolish to allow themselves to be beaten and brutalized and do nothing whatsoever to protect themselves. They are foolish. They should have the right to defend themselves against any attack made against them by anyone. If a dog is biting a black man, the black man should kill the dog. Whether the dog is a police dog, a hound dog, or any kind of dog. If a dog is picked on a black man, when that black man is doing nothing but trying to take advantage of what the government says it's supposed to be is, then that black man should kill that dog or any two-legged dog. you'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, as other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. It is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to, has to bring an end to, has to bring an end to.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed in on this broadcast. Let's go ahead and take a listen to this video of Hillary Clinton being confronted by a black woman from Charlotte, North Carolina. This occurred at a fundraiser in South Carolina. I believe it was in Rock Hill, South Carolina, that this took place. Give me just a second as I try to get this video loaded up for you. Take a listen to it. So she was at this fundraiser about 2 days ago in Charleston, South Carolina. And you had what's being described as a Black Lives Matter activist hold up a banner and ask her, which Hillary Clinton are you? And, you know, asking her about her language in trying to pass they actually did pass it, the Clinton crime bill in the 90s, and using the same racist rhetoric of the right wing in describing black children as super predators, and even talking about we have to bring them to heel. So let's go ahead and take a listen to this woman. I don't have her name right now. But if I had it, I certainly would share it. But I want to give a shout out to the sister for taking action and confronting this woman. So again, this was at a fundraiser by Hillary Clinton, $500 a plate.
We're making sure that South Carolina became the first state with body cameras. There's more work to be done, but you got to lay down these markers. You got to build toward common sense gun reform, criminal justice reform, and all the like. So I think we've got somebody saying here, we have
to
bring
them to
heel. Okay, we'll talk about
it. I'm not a super predator, Hillary Clinton.
Okay, fine, we'll talk about it.
Can you apologize to black people for mass incarceration?
Well, can I talk, and then maybe you can listen to what I say?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much. There's a lot of issues in this campaign. The very first speech that I gave back in April was about criminal justice reform and about
predators.
You're being rude. That's not appropriate. This is not appropriate.
Now, do you want to hear the facts or just want to talk?
I know that you called black people predators in 1994. Please explain to the record. Explain it to us. You owe black people an apology.
Well,
if you will
give me a chance to talk, I'll help your side. You know what? Nobody's ever asked me before. You're the first person to ask me, and I'm happy to address it, but you are the first person to ask me here. Okay, back to the issues.
Thank you.
The issues that I just reported.
So, Hillary Clinton saying that was the first person to ask her. And so, I mean, that's also a commentary on the state of quote-unquote journalism in this country. Again, I'm going to play a clip here in just a bit of Hillary Clinton talking about cannabis prohibition and whatnot. And I already noted at the beginning of the program how Roland Martin quickly changed the subject. and just allow Hillary Clinton to get away with a canned answer. All this woman deals in is talking points. And that black woman, if you watch the video, I have linked to the video, she gave Hillary Clinton an opportunity to answer the question. Hillary Clinton started to indirectly, I guess, address it without addressing it. But before they ushered this woman out, you know, she said, nobody's ever asked me that question before. Oh, so that goes to show you the state of journalism. This is just more evidence of what Michelle Alexander said about the state of media. The fact that you got all these black people being polled and in high percentages saying that they support Hillary Clinton's candidacy, plan to vote for her in the primaries, plan to vote for her in the general election and whatnot. That just, Michelle Alexander said that this shows you that the media has not been doing its job in educating the public. And so I would go further to say the black media hasn't been doing its damn job. Black journalists who have access or are on these corporate media platforms are not doing their damn jobs and asking the right questions and confronting this woman on her racism and white supremacy. You know, these people, when I say these people, I'm talking about the Clintons, I'm talking about Bill Clinton, I'm talking about Hillary Clinton. Both of them in the 1960s supported racist politicians. Bill Clinton even cites a known racist white supremacist, all right, a known racist white supremacist, a senator out of Arkansas, where he later became governor, but Bill Clinton cites this guy as his mentor, okay? And so, I mean, we could look back through there, even when they were campaigning in the 1990s, the racist rhetoric they were engaging in order to attract the white racist vote and not conceding the racist vote to the Republicans. Man, how can we forget these things? All right. And then even when Barack Obama was running for president and how the Clintons use racist dog whistles against Barack Obama's candidacy. And you even had Bill Clinton, when he found out certain black politicians were going to endorse Barack Obama, he called them bastards. All right. Do y'all think these people, you know, like John Lewis gonna say, you know, Hillary Clinton changed or she came to, you know, the right conclusions? And look, I ain't going to say that. I want to believe that there is really hope for people to change. But, you know, it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks. And these are a couple of old racists. All right. And, you know, I don't think that they have changed. I don't think that they have whatsoever. Hillary Clinton ain't never apologized for calling black kids super predators. She ain't apologized for promoting the racist white supremacy myth of the welfare queens and whatnot. This is Bill and Hillary Clinton. You would think that they were, if you didn't know they were Democrats, you would think that they were Republicans. And when I say Democrats, I'm just simply meaning a member of the Democratic Party. Okay? So, you know, shout out to that sister for paying the $500. She was not trespassing. She paid the money to get in there in order to confront Hillary Clinton. She did not have a cardboard sign. She had a cloth sign, which was smart because then she could just put it in a bag and nobody knew what she was up to and what she was going to do. All right. And that was a room full of rich people, a room full of white people that was trying to shout her down and talking about it was inappropriate and all this and that. Shout out to the black sister for doing us proud and confronting this racist woman face to face. I'm so sick of people wanting to be polite when it comes to a bunch of racists who have a track record of harming black people. It's time out for that politeness. It's time out for political correctness. It's just time out for it all. We are up against 21st century slavery and human trafficking. We are up against warmongers who see no problem with assisting radical Arabs, Islamists in Africa, and using them to overthrow countries and then stand by and laugh while they murder a bunch of black people. That's Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. And they have to be confronted on these issues. And they have to be asked these questions. And these questions are not being asked by the mainstream freaking media. I get so disgusted with some of these black people that I see, so-called analysts, so-called political commentators, and they, you know, they act like black people are children. These are black people portraying black voters as children and whatnot. Now, something is definitely wrong with black voters, with the electorate or the voting bloc of black voters, if they are supporting a racist white supremacist like Hillary Clinton. Now, I'm not willing to say that they're stupid or they're childlike or anything. I'm willing to conclude, I have concluded, that they don't have access to truthful information about the Clintons. Now, most of the other ones, they've sold out. They're a bunch of sellouts. They're looking for Hillary Clinton to become president and appoint them to different positions within the U.S. government, whether they're elected officials or not. And that's why they're supporting her. They're trying to, you know, come up on her coattails. And regardless of all the black people she has harmed in her life as part of the dynamic duo of the Clinton team, despite all of that history, they still want to support this woman and tell other people that, you know, what the hell? So, shout out to that sister for confronting Hillary Clinton on her super predator language, her racism and white supremacy. It was totally appropriate for her to do what she did. Totally. And I'm proud of her. Now, let's move on to this town hall meeting that I came across that happened in South Carolina a couple of months ago, where Hillary Clinton was asked a question about cannabis prohibition. And here is the answer that she gave. Of course, she's lying.
Help get people registered to make sure people understand how they meet whatever the requirements are and that they then turn out.
Okay, that's the wrong clip. Hold up. Let me find the right clip. Here it is.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Clinton. My name is Nicholas Stewart. I'm a junior here at Claflin University. With more states legalizing marijuana for both medical and recreational use, what is your plan to tackle the issue of marijuana prohibition on the federal level?
Well, here's what I believe. I believe that states are taking this this step. And, you know, there's that great phrase attributed, I think, to Roosevelt, that states are the laboratories of democracy. And I want to see how it works before we do a national plan from the federal government, because I think there's a lot for us to learn. But what I do want is for us to support research into medical marijuana, because a lot more states have passed medical marijuana than have legalized marijuana. So we've got two different experiences or even experiments going on right now. And the problem with medical marijuana is that there's a lot of anecdotal evidence about how well it works for certain conditions, but we haven't done any research. Why? Because it's considered what's called a Schedule I drug, and you can't even do research in it. So I would like to move it from what's called Schedule I to Schedule II, so that, you know, researchers at universities, at the National Institute of Health, could start researching what's the best way to use it. How much dose does somebody need? How does it interact with other medications? Because if we're going to have a lot of states setting up marijuana dispensaries so that people who have some kind of medical need are getting marijuana, we need to know what's the quality of it, how much should you take, what should you avoid if you're taking other medications. So that's how I'm currently thinking about it.
So, again, a bunch of bullshit from a master liar. Hillary Clinton, look, this is the reason she don't want cannabis removed from the Schedule I list that the federal government maintains through the corrupt and criminal Drug Enforcement Agency. It's the same reason Barack Obama will not use the power of his office as the executive officer, the chief executive officer of the executive branch of the U.S. government, is because he does not want to free any of these people who are behind bars right now behind cannabis, because that's what it would ultimately mean. All right, that's what it would ultimately mean. If the federal government lifts its prohibition of cannabis, then that means that you have to revisit all of these people who are in federal prisons over cannabis, and look at setting them free, because you've now legalized the substance, or you're no longer prohibiting and you're getting a big government out of the lives of people. But more to the point, here you have this woman just straight up lying, saying she supports moving it to Schedule 2 so the research can be done. Listen, they've been doing research, scientific research, throughout the world and here in the United States on cannabis. So why is this woman just flat out lying to you? She has to have a reason for lying and telling people, like, you know, there is no research. Let me just share. I posted an article to normal.org that has this really long article about the recent research on medical marijuana, since she won't talk about that and whatnot. Let me just share some excerpts from that. It says, the scientific conclusion of the overwhelming majority of modern research directly conflicts with the federal government's stance that cannabis is a highly dangerous substance worthy of absolute criminalization. For example, in February 2010, investigators at the University of California Center for Medicinal Cannabis Research publicly announced the findings of a series of randomized placebo-controlled clinical trials on the medical utility of inhaled cannabis. The studies, which utilized the so-called gold standard FDA clinical trial design, concluded that cannabis ought to be a first-line treatment for patients with neuropathy and other serious illnesses. Let me see. Goes on to talk about a whole bunch of other research, but let me pull up another article. Here is an article from alternate.org about five recent cannabis studies, and I'm just waiting for that article to populate, as it's taking a little time to load. But this woman is a liar. So you have to look at her connections to the private prison industry. She can sit up there and say she'll end private prison if she become president, you know, all she wants to. Don't believe this known liar. She's a liar. Okay, this comes to you from alternate.org. Five of the latest marijuana studies that upend decades of myths and fear mongering. Scientific discoveries are published almost daily. All right, almost daily, rebuking the federal government's contention that cannabis is a highly dangerous substance lacking therapeutic efficacy. But most of these findings appear primarily in obscure peer-reviewed journals and often go unnoticed by the major media and the general public. Here are five new cannabis-centric studies that warrant mainstream attention. Early onset pot use isn't associated with adverse outcomes in adulthood. Kids who experiment with weed are far less likely than non-users to be healthy and successful adults. So says the conventional wisdom, but new science says otherwise. Investigators from the Pittsburgh School of Medicine and Rutgers University prospectively examined whether male subjects who consumed cannabis between the ages of 15 and 26 differed in terms of socioeconomic, social, and life satisfaction outcomes by their mid-30s as compared to those who were either abstinent or only consumed it sparingly. After controlling for potential co-founders, such as the use of alcohol and other illicit substances, researchers reported that pot-consuming subjects, including those who used the substance habitually, were generally not at a heightened risk for maladjustment in adulthood. All right, you can go on, read the rest of that. Let me see. I do need to post this to Black Talk Radio's Facebook page so you can. Well, I think I already have. Proving medical cannabis access reduces opioid abuses. So again, you know, right now, and I'm not going to go into all the background of why you have a heroin epidemic, other than to say it is government. It is because of the U.S. government and its clandestine agencies that all of a sudden you got all this pure heroin hitting the United States. You know, it is comparable to the crack cocaine epidemic, which we know without a doubt, the evidence is out there that the U.S. government, the CIA, primarily wanted to fund their anti-democracy death squads in South America to overthrow democratically elected governments simply because those governments were quote-unquote socialist. And in order to fund these mass murdering gangs that was running across South America, they had to do it off the books. And so by allowing, hooking up with drug dealers in South America, allowing them to smuggle dope into the United States and the CIA getting a cut of the profits is how they were funding that. This is history, people. This isn't a conspiracy theories. This is a conspiracy fact. And I suspect the same thing is going on with the heroin epidemic that's primarily hitting white communities now. But again, if you look over at Afghanistan and you see U.S. soldiers guarding the poppy fields of Afghan farmers and whatnot, and you know, and then so the U.S. government is sanctioning, by using troops this way, they're sanctioning the production of a poppy, which is used to create heroin. So here is a study that shows that if you want to get people off of Oxycontin and all of that kind of stuff, opioids, then providing medical cannabis access will address that problem. Let me go ahead and read a little bit. And this comes to you. This was a study that was published recently by the National Bureau of Economic Research, a nonpartisan think tank. It says, is legalized pot a gateway to fewer opioid-related deaths? The data says yes. It says that states that permit qualified patients to access medical marijuana via dispensaries possess lower rates of opioid addiction and overdose deaths as compared to those that do not. Researchers from the RAND Corporation and the University of California Irvine assessed the impact of medicinal cannabis laws on problematic opioid use as measured by treatment admissions for opioid pain reliever addiction and by state level opioid overdose deaths. They concluded states permitting medical marijuana dispensaries experience a relative decrease in both opioid addictions and opioid overdose deaths compared to states that do not. What is the connection there that they're not making clear? Most opioids are prescribed by doctors as a pain reliever. Guess what cannabis is? It's a pain reliever as well. So I'm not going to read all the rest of these stories, but this is, again, just to point out what a freaking liar Hillary Clinton is, because we just heard her say or insinuate that there is no medical research being done. Oh, like we're so damn stupid to believe that all these states would legalize medicinal cannabis and then allow doctors to prescribe it, or even doctors themselves would be prescribing it if the research wasn't already showing that it can be used to treat whatever ailments they're prescribing it for. This is, I mean, this should be something simple for someone to see right through her lies and engage in critical thinking. Why, you know, Hillary Clinton, why do you need to put it on? Why do you want to schedule it as Schedule 2 instead of Schedule 1? Well, so we can let the universities do research on it. Damn, universities are already doing research. So what else are you lying about? See, this is the stuff that mainstream media is not confronting her on, and that's why it takes people, activists, to confront these people, to infiltrate, you know, wherever they are, and confront them with this. So, you know, Hillary Clinton is just a liar. All she's trying to do is protect the private prison industry, the private prisons and jails, as well as the bonding companies and whatnot, you know, to bail you out of jail on cannabis charges and all of that. We've seen Colorado, since they have totally legalized cannabis, not just for medicinal use, we see the outcome of now, since they passed it, that they are bringing in all this money and tax revenues, which are then being funneled to the schools to you know, go to the school budgets and whatnot to educate children. So I don't know what she's talking about in terms of we need to wait and all this and that, and we don't have enough information and all. The woman is lying. She's lying. And it's evident by the evidence that she's telling a lie. Now, she lied about something as simple as that. What else is she lying about? I would submit to you that not a word that comes out of her mouth can be trusted. She's a liar. So anyway, that is what I wanted, the information that I wanted to share with you today as we get ready to conclude our program. Again, I'm trying to get in touch with the people who have live programs scheduled for tonight to see if they're going to go on and do the programs, as they may not be aware that I do have power now restored to the house where I broadcast out of. And so I can't say for certain, but just keep it locked on Black Talk Radio Network, and you'll definitely hear more information about whether those programs will be on air tonight. Let's see. Today is Friday. Today's Friday. So I won't be back on air till next Monday at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of Black Talk Radio News. Recognize the fact that you live behind enemy lines of USA Inc., that they have policies, they have laws in place to lock your ass up and make you a modern-day slave on a modern-day plantation. All right? Now, we do need to be fighting against this political system. We need to be demanding repeal of these drug laws. We need to be using every tool at our disposal in this fight. We can't leave any area, any battlefield unchallenged. And that includes politics. All right. That includes politics. And in a number of these states, they have been able to legalize cannabis by voter ballot. Ballots that have, you know, the voters put out, gathered enough signatures, got them on the ballot, and then it was passed. And now we have new laws that allow for the legalization, taxation, and regulation of cannabis. This common sense stuff, all right? So, but until we can implement a system of justice, you need to develop battlefield awareness so that you can avoid the pitfalls of ending up as a modern-day slave on one of these federal plantations. Because, you know, for all the talk of all this criminal justice reform, we don't need reform. We need abolitionists. Hillary Clinton is not an abolitionist. She is the exact opposite of abolitionism. And she is, quite frankly, in my opinion, a lying murderess. All right. So y'all know how I feel about that woman. All right, so I'll be back on air Monday. Peace and blessings to all.
Descending from the tribes of Africa, inspired by the great black leaders.
Dynamic, articulate, perceptive, courageous, outspoken.